Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile.
With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The latest from 7 News with Michael Usher.
Good evening and welcome. Tonight, the Foreign Minister moments away from arriving in Europe for a crucial NATO meeting, breaking down the petrol price drop, the savings and, will it last, new research on pain in babies and what medics have been missing, new signs for parents, fascinating Australian research, and we'll take you live to London for the verdict in Ed Sheeran's copyright fight over one of his big hits. But first tonight, the Foreign Minister, as we just said, is moments away from landing in Brussels for a key NATO meeting on the war in Ukraine. Let's go live to our Europe Bureau Chief, Hugh Whitfeld, who's stationed in Kyiv for us. Hugh, good evening. So what are we expecting from these talks?
Michael, Maurice Payne will be meeting foreign ministers, fellow foreign ministers from NATO countries and partner nations like Australia. Of course, Australia isn't a member of NATO, but we do get invited to meetings like this on occasions. There will be two key parts of these talks. The first one is aid and the second is sanctions. The White House expected to announce very soon fresh sanctions against Moscow, targeting Russia's largest bank and also Vladimir Putin's children as well. Of course, there is an effort to try and make this a united front from the West when it comes to those sanctions. And in terms of aid, well, this country is going to need a lot of help to get back on its feet when this war is eventually over, and we're already seeing the sort of rebuilding that's going to need to take place in some of these parts of the country that are already liberated.
Hugh, let's talk about the actual fighting and the war in Ukraine itself and an urgent Luhansk to the east.
Yeah, so Luhansk down in the Donbass, Donetsk and Luhansk, those two Ukrainian provinces essentially that were taken over by Russian-backed separatists back in 2014. There's been a war there the whole time since then. Now there is a concern that as Russia has withdrawn from the areas around the capital here, that the focus from Moscow will be shifted down to that eastern part of Ukraine to try and take more ground down there. The Ukrainians are expecting that to happen in the coming days, and they are trying to open up humanitarian corridors out of Luhansk in particular so that civilians can get out. There is a lot of people trying to get to train stations in places like Kramatorsk, which are currently controlled by Ukraine. And of course, the fear is that the fighting there is only going to intensify, that it's going to get so much worse.
Now, Ukraine's top prosecutors are reporting today that they say they're going through, Hugh, almost 4,500 alleged war crimes, and they have new evidence of atrocities in Bucha. Terrible things have happened there. What have their investigations found? And you've been seeing all this firsthand as well, Hugh, in your tours of the area.
Yeah, well, look, these war crimes obviously mainly relate to what Russians are alleged to have done to civilians. Thousands of incidents of episodes like explosions and debris that have killed people caused by missile strikes or artillery fire. We've seen that in towns and Borodyanka as well. The President, Volodymyr Zelensky, when he addressed the UN Security Council yesterday, spoke about the torture of civilians, the execution with automatic weapons of civilians in these towns, and said that some of the bodies had been dismembered. They are horrific crimes. And Zelensky said that it is the worst case of war crimes since the Second World War. And I fear, as you say, that we're only going to see far more uncovered as the Russians are pushed back.
You mentioned the President Zelensky there talking to the UN, but he was very, very scathing about the UN.
Yeah, look, he's been scathing of NATO and he's been scathing of the UN. And this was quite a remarkable speech that Volodymyr Zelensky gave to the Security Council, because Russia has a permanent seat on the UN Security Council. They have a veto. And that is what is clearly blocking a lot of the possible action that could be taken by the Security Council when it comes to punishing Russia for what they've done here. They've got China as a fellow permanent member as well. China hasn't spoken out at all at the UN about what Russia has been doing. So the UN is effectively blocked from doing anything. And Zelensky was saying, if you can't do anything, you may as well disband. Mm. You may as well all go home. What is the purpose of the Security Council if you're not going to do anything? Can they kick Russia off the UN Security Council? No, because all five of the permanent members need to agree, and Russia's one of them. Michael.
He's got a very good point. Hugh Whitfield there in Kyiv for us. Thank you. Let's go straight to Parliament House, and political reporter Jennifer Beshwati's there for us. Jen, good evening. The opposition leader has just made a big call on the war in Ukraine.
That's right, Michael. Labor is tonight calling for the Morrison government to expel Russian diplomats given the recent atrocities by Russian forces in Ukraine. Recently, EU countries, including Italy, Germany and France, have taken steps to expel 206 diplomats from their countries while allowing the ambassadors to stay. Labor wants Australia to follow suit. Now, the Foreign Affairs Minister, Maurice Payne, has said that this matter is under constant review, but opposition leader Anthony Albanese he says that it's hard to conceive how these individuals have been allowed to stay in Australia, particularly given the recent revelations of war crimes being committed, those mass killings of innocent civilians and the use of rape as a weapon of war. Must be immediate diplomatic consequences, and these individuals, these diplomats in Australia, must be kicked out of the country immediately. We'll wait and see what the federal government has to say about this tomorrow, Michael.
Strong call by the opposition leader. Yeah. Now, Jen, another hurdle tonight for the Prime Minister before he can even call the election.
Yeah, that's right, Michael. The New South Wales state executive member who lodged that appeal or that court challenge against Scott Morrison's captain picks for candidates in seats in New South Wales has now lodged an appeal with the High Court. Matthew Camenzulli is challenging the validity of candidates in 11 seats, which branch members. Now, the New South Wales Court of Appeal, as I mentioned, dismissed Mr. Camenzulli's application yesterday, so he's taking it to the High Court. It's understood a motions hearing will be held here in Canberra at 1:30 p.m. tomorrow, but the drama continues, Michael, because I understand that Matthew Camenzulli has tonight been expelled from the Liberal Party given his recent court challenges. So I don't know whether this complicates things. I'm sure it does. And it's the last thing that the Prime Minister needs at on the eve of an election. Yeah. As for when that election will be called, well, we got a better understanding today, Michael. We know it definitely won't be called tomorrow. But as 7 News reported yesterday, all signs point to the election being called on Sunday, and Australians will likely head to the polls at the latest possible date, and that will be May 21.
Bit of a messy bit of housekeeping for the Liberals to sort out before then, isn't there? All right, Jen, thanks for that in Canberra. Looking ahead to tomorrow, when large parts of New South Wales are going to be hit with torrential rainfall, possibly up to 2 months' worth in a day. Our reporter Bill Hogan's out amongst it all, where it's been pretty bad. Bill, good evening to you. So what are the warnings from the Bureau as we go to air?
Well, Michael, this weather system spans from Gosford all the way to Bega, but the concern tonight is the Illawarra and Shoalhaven region, where the rain is beginning to intensify and there is concern for flash flooding. Now, tomorrow, the Bureau has predicted that up to 140 millimetres of rain will fall every 6 hours in some coastal towns, which has the SES quite concerned. That weather system will then move north to Greater Sydney, as well as to the Central Coast and up into the Hunter. Now, the concern is the water, the amount of heavy rain that is going to fall on already saturated grounds, as well as creeks and waterways that are already at capacity. There is real concern that there will be serious flooding in those areas. There's also concern for debris. A lot of this road could fall away. The SES have issued a warning to drivers to avoid driving if you can, and avoid going down into floodwaters, of course, if you can as well. Now, there is some relief, though, Michael. We are told that this weather system will start to weaken by Friday. It will still be very wet, but it should begin to clear up just before the weekend.
That's Michael. What we want to hear. All right, Bill Hogan in Wollongong tonight. Thank you. And just in from verdict on Ed Sheeran's copyright lawsuit over these songs. Well, Well, that was the comparison of the two songs. And our Europe correspondent, Sarah Greenalch, is following the case from near the High Court in London. So, Sarah, hello to you. What was the outcome?
Michael, good evening. Well, the judge in this case has just ruled that Ed Sheeran did not copy or plagiarise that second song when he created his hit song Shape of You. Ed Sheeran was accused by this guy called Sam Chokri. He's a British rhyme artist who said that there were striking similarities between his song OY, which was released without very much fanfare in 2015, and that particular Ed Sheeran's song. I'm glad you've played it because it means I don't have to sing it. It's that OI part there. And this led to this 11-day trial here in London. And so both sides called in forensic musicologists. They were called up onto the stand to examine both songs to say whether they thought they were similar. Ed Sheeran himself was on the stand. He was singing parts of other songs to justify that most songs do sound similar if you really analyse them. He was also accused of being a musical magpie for habitually copying other people's songs. And it must be said that there is some history here. Back in 2017, Ed Sheeran did settle a massive $20 million US dollar case, another copyright infringement case in the United States. But in this case, the judge has said that it is purely coincidental, the similarities in this song. He said that Ed Sheeran didn't even know about this other song, OY, when he wrote the hit back in 2016. And the 31-year-old has just responded to the result. He has released a video on his Twitter and Instagram. Take a listen.
Whilst we're obviously happy with the result, I feel like claims like this are way too common now and have become a culture where a claim is made with the idea that a settlement will be cheaper than taking it to court, even if there's no base for the claim. It's really damaging to the songwriting industry. There's only so many notes and very few chords used in pop music. Coincidence is bound to happen if 60,000 songs are being released every day on Spotify. That's 22 million songs a year, and there's only 12 notes that are available.
During these legal proceedings, Michael, the judge did acknowledge that there were not only going to be financial repercussions if Sheeran lost this case, but his reputation was at stake. If he was defeated, then others would have been emboldened to make similar claims. So he has won, and this song is such a big hit. It was the number one song here in the UK back in 2017, and it remains the most streamed song ever on Spotify, and it is very catchy. I think I'll be singing it for the rest of the day.
You've heard enough of it today. All right, you've got an earworm for the song now. Sarah Greenalch there in London, thank you. I want to take you next to our chief league reporter, Michelle Bishop, with the Development Newsroom. Michelle, so we're talking about a rising player in trouble with the law tonight. What details do you have?
Well, Taylan has been a revelation for the club, for the Panthers. He's been their point-scoring machine. He is the younger brother of former Panther Tyrone May. Now, he's been charged with assault, occasioning bodily harm, a very serious charge that carries a prison term of 7 years. It relates to an incident that happened on the Sunshine Coast after last year's grand final win over South. Now, of course, Taylan didn't play in that game, but he was very much part of the Panthers' squad at the time. It's alleged he assaulted another patron at a nightclub at Ocean Street, Maroochydore. The club say they told the NRL Integrity Unit about the incident at the time and conducted their own investigation and implemented their own disciplinary measures as well. Now, the 20-year-old is due to face court in May, but he is eligible to continue to play to be selected for the Panthers until that time.
Yeah, a cloud over a club that's absolutely on fire at the moment. Michelle Bishop, thank you for that.
Thanks, Marsh.
And former AFL player Brennan Stack is remaining behind bars tonight after a judge saw footage of his alleged attack on two women. Let's go to Rochelle Brown, who's live in Melbourne tonight. Rochelle, good evening to you. What can you tell us?
Michael, a magistrate refused to free the former Bulldogs player today after watching the confronting security footage for the very you can see in the video two women start to punch each other and pull each other's hair, and then two men start to get involved. One of those men in the black t-shirt is alleged to be Brennan Stack. You can see him punch one woman and then set upon another, hitting her twice. The brutality continues for several minutes, with Stack's co-accused also getting involved. It all unfolded in a car park next to a Perth nightclub on March 20. And it's believed to have started after two car doors hit each other. Police have described the incident as sickening and vicious. Obviously, the victims were left quite visibly shaken, battered and bruised from the ordeal. Stack and his co-accused will now remain behind bars, the magistrate saying that it was far too serious of an ordeal to grant bail. Michael?
All right, Rochelle Brown reporting there. Thank you. Next to a major blunder by Queensland police, our report Murphy's live in Brisbane. Ben, this was related to domestic violence training.
Yeah, good evening, Michael. Quite an embarrassing mistake by Queensland Police using a silhouette image of Adolf Hitler in their domestic violence training, specifically the training about coercive control. Now, how did this all come to be? Well, police were looking for a graphic to use in their document and in their training, which depicts a police officer talking to a suspected victim of domestic violence, and police had to issue a statement today explaining it all, and they say that the training group involved used a piece of software called Canva. It's a little bit like Photoshop, and essentially in that tool they searched for a police officer silhouette, and this image came up, and of course it seems, not knowing that it was actually an image of Hitler, they've inserted it into the training package. Certainly not the sort of thing you want to see in domestic violence training. Police say that they have now removed the image from their training modules.
That is a blunder and a half. All right, Ben Murphy there in Brisbane, thank you. We are seeing petrol prices starting to fall around the country, but by how much, where you live, and what's actually driving the dip? To explain all this, Network Finance Editor Gemma Acton joins me now. Gemma, good evening to you. So prices, they seem to be coming down. Is that because the Treasurer cut the excise?
Well, they're certainly coming down. They're coming down by around 27% on average in Brisbane, Sydney and Melbourne. That's since the Treasurer cut the excise like last week. Around 31 cents in Adelaide, 35 in Perth, and a bit less in Hobart, closer to 20%. But no, we can't attribute all of that to the fuel excise cut. That's certainly part of the picture, but only part of the picture.
All right, so what's happening with the prices then?
Well, there are really four main factors that we're looking at now. One is the cut to fuel excise, which is a cut of 22.1% until September the 28th, and that kicked in immediately at midnight last Tuesday after the budget. The biggest factor, though, is wholesale oil prices, or global oil prices feeding through to wholesale. That's been trending lower since the 9th of March. Usually it only takes a week or 2 weeks to feed through to the Bowser, but for some reason retailers sat on those drops, and so we've been getting that a bit later. Just in the last week we've seen those price falls feed through.
Right.
Another factor is petrol price cycles. All of the capital cities in Australia operate on price cycles, which is just prices go up for a while and then they go down for a while at the retailer level. All of the capital cities at the moment are in a downtrend right with regards to price cycles. Another factor is the Australian dollar. That's been strengthening, and we pay for the fuel in US dollars. So our money's just going further. So four tailwinds, effectively, of which fuel excise cut is one.
I guess it begs the question then, did the Treasurer need to cut the fuel excise?
It depends on who you ask. Certainly it gave instantaneous relief because people could implement it straight away, and that's what we really needed. You'll see there was a lot of protests from all sorts of bodies associated with motoring. For instance, the Trucking Association have come out really heavily against it. Economists don't really like it either, for different reasons. Economists don't really like it because it's not particularly targeted, or they think it doesn't necessarily help the people who need the help the most. The other problem, which we're just seeing, is it can get completely lost in other movements that are happening.
Yeah.
And a question is, if oil prices start to rise again, when the petrol retail cycle starts heading higher again, if the Aussie dollar weakens, so all those forces start going against it, the fuel excise cut will be completely lost in that. And so difficult to see what people will gain from it.
For now, anyway, motorists can enjoy the cheaper prices.
I think we'll take anything we can get
exactly
at the moment.
Right. All right, Jim. Thank you.
Thanks, Michael.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
We have details tonight on a world-first study that all new parents should pay attention to. Australian scientists have come up with new criteria to tell if babies are in pain, even if they aren't showing it. Dr. Emre Ilhan from Macquarie University carried out the research of children 1 year and under in neonatal intensive care. He joins us in the studio now. Emre, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
So is it fair to assume that babies would cry or scream if they're in agony? But that's not always the case, though. Is that what you're finding?
Our study was based in the neonatal intensive care unit. So usually these babies, because they're so critically ill, they tend to be so sick they can't cry, or, you know, they might be premature, so they haven't developed the motor skills to actually cry. Mainly we rely on different behavioural cues, such as crying. But if that's not available, we look at other things like facial expressions, body movement, the tone in their muscles. Other than that, there are other cues that are also important, and they're very relevant to premature babies. So physiological measures such as heart rate, breathing rate, blood pressure.
And they're all able to tell you that the baby may be in pain. There's just a different way of measuring it from what we're used to detecting, you know, a baby crying, for example, or some sort of sound.
Yeah, so the issue is, how do you distinguish pain from hunger?
Yes. It's a challenge for many parents with babies.
Definitely.
Sick or otherwise.
Definitely. Yeah. And especially in the NICU, where babies are exposed to a lot of noise and a lot of other medical procedures. So we have to find very systematic, objective ways to measure pain, to say, yes, that baby has pain, no, that baby is hungry or a little bit stressed.
Just putting underscoring what the criteria would be now to detect pain, what are the key points? What are the new things that practitioners can actually look out for, even parents? If a child isn't crying but they're in pain, what can they measure instead?
In the neonatal intensive care unit, the signs such as, you know, not interacting with their caregiver, not eating properly, sleeplessness, all these variables are very important to recognise. And clinicians are very good at detecting it using validated assessments.
Yeah. What happens when a baby's unknowingly exposed to repeated intense pain without relief? It might not have been detected properly.
That's a very good question. There's been research coming out since the mid-90s, and there's even research coming out even now suggesting that unrelieved pain in babies in the NICU, the neonatal intensive care unit, can result in things like anxiety, depression, hypersensitivity to pain later in life, as well as delays in the development of important skills like moving around, language, cognition.
So we're talking about pain and different criteria detecting pain, but what about pain relief?
Yes, so there is a lot of pain relief strategies that we could use in the NICUs, in addition to, you know, morphine, fentanyl, paracetamol. Other methods, non-pharmacological methods, are as effective, if not more effective, for treating acute pain. And these include things like breastfeeding or skin-to-skin contact, so putting a mother's baby on her skin during a painful procedure has been shown to be effective at relieving pain in babies. There are other things as well, like sucking a dummy, even giving some sugar water.
Right.
Yeah.
So things that would seem so simple and so natural but can be of huge relief.
Simple yet effective. And they've actually been underutilized. It's new research is coming out, and a lot of NICUs are starting to adopt these practices more regularly.
It's a bit heartbreaking to think that quite a few babies, and many babies, would have been going through pain without it really being known.
It wasn't until the mid-80s babies were actually getting any pain relief. So a famous case was before 1987, babies were undergoing major cardiac surgery without any pain relief.
Goodness me.
Yeah, it's very heartbreaking. Nowadays, NICUs, neonatal intensive care units, do a very good job at managing pain as much as they can. But obviously, some babies go under the radar. You know, they have very severe conditions, or they're born very premature. So the detection of pain in these babies can be quite difficult.
It's interesting. A lot of parents will be watching this with a lot of interest as well, and no doubt the medical community as well. Dr. Ilhan, thank you for coming in.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, thank you for your company this evening. From all the team here at 7 News, that is The Latest. I'm Michael Usher. Have a good night.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hi, I'm Megan Rinks.
And I'm Melissa D. Montz.
And like every other person with access to a microphone, we started a podcast.
On Mondays, we release Don't Blame Me, which is an advice podcast where listeners call in and we share our thoughts on situations such as what to do if you're going to your boyfriend's family function and you haven't told him that you previously slept with both his twin brothers.
Then on Thursdays, we release our podcast, But Am I Wrong?, where we ethically gossip about pop culture, politics, our lives, and your lives. Listeners write in and we tell them if they're wrong or right in a situation. Are you the hero or the villain?
On Tuesdays and Fridays, we throw in a little something extra as well.
Well, something, something. We strive to create a community grounded in activism, mental health, and inclusivity. Think of us as like your blunt, honest friends who give you advice that you need to hear, not what you want to hear. But we're also always rooting for your success. What we lack in credentials, we make up for in
opinions.
We do that in every episode too.
We're professional unprofessionals, so if you're looking for a new slate of podcasts to add to your routine, we're here for you.
Acast recommends.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.